Hi, I'm Ryan Dodge Cook, and this is Summit to Talk About, your one-stop podcast for all things hiking, hills, wild camping, and the great outdoors. If you've just discovered the podcast, please make sure that you go back and binge the back catalogue of episodes where I chat to awesome guests who all love the great outdoors, just like you and I. So, we're into March, and I've set myself a bit of a challenge. 500,000 steps in March. It sounds a lot, but when you break it down, it's just 16,129 steps per day, which is around 7.5 miles. Now, on a good day, that's very achievable, but one day of not being able to get out can throw you off quite quickly. I'd already signed up to 1,000 miles in a year, which is going quite well, but I want to hear about your challenges. What have you got planned? What are you already doing? I'm setting up a WhatsApp for Summit to Talk About, and I want you to drop your voice notes and messages to me so that I can share them on each episode. I'll leave the number in the show notes. This week, I want to hear all about your challenges, so please drop me a message. My favourite tool for planning my own hiking challenges is Hiker. Hiker is a free-to-download app packed with cool features like multiple map choices that you can download free of charge for offline use. Over 25,000 preloaded trail routes across the world and loads of information along the trail, such as shops, hotels, B&Bs or campgrounds. Download it now via the link in the show notes and start exploring straight away from your fingertips. In this episode, I chat with Martin Little, who has founded Health, Happiness and Healing, offering wilderness retreats with wild camping, breathwork and cold water therapy. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so I'm now joined by Martin Little, who is the founder of Health, Happiness and Healing. And we're going to come on to exactly what that is in a little while. But what I want to do first of all, Martin, is welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you.
And with all my guests, I tend to hit the timeline from the very, very beginning. And I want to find out a bit about you, because clearly Summit to Talk About is all about the outdoors, hiking, wild camping, etc., etc. So There's clearly a link there, but we're going to come to that in a little while. So first of all, tell us about yourself. Who are you? Whereabouts are you from? And how did your life come to be into the world of the outdoors?
Okay, so I'm 36 years old now. I live in Preston. I've always been in Preston. I've worked a lot of time overseas. So my background... had a really good childhood. All my best childhood memories are all camping holidays, going to caravans, playing around in rivers, floating around in little rafts. All my best childhood memories are all outside in the outdoors. And further on in life, I joined the military. So obviously we had a lot of extensive training outside in the field. When we went on exercise in the military, we called it aggressive camping. There's nothing pleasant about it. So I served in the military for around 7 years, and then I went overseas for another 6 years doing some security work, and then relocated back to England when I found out I was going to be a father. And then I always spent a lot of time outdoors, whether it be in the mountains or fishing and camping and things like that. And then I realized through incidents I've been through in my military career and private security industry, I was actually quite a damaged person at the time. On my first tour of Afghanistan, I was blown up by a suicide bomber. This killed three of my colleagues and severely injured myself. I was quite fortunate to keep my right arm. This took me about 18 months to recover in rehab because of all the nerve damage. And after the period of rehab, I went back to the Army barracks, and about 12 months later, I went back to Afghanistan and completed a full tour. Wow. I was awarded an MID on my second tour. I mentioned dispatches. I met the Queen after that at the garden party in Buckingham Palace. Fantastic finger food. Got way too drunk. Celebrated in style.
Well deserved.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely at the time. I think from all these incidents, and I was badly bullied as a child. I've been through intense family issues. I lost my father. I realised that I was really suffering with bad mental health. And I got to a point where, you know, I was suicidal, was poisoning my body with drugs, I was addicted, and I didn't really know what to do. Now, I had all the help in front of me at that time, be it psychiatrists, friends, family, all trying to reach out to me. And for some reason, there was just a block in front of me, a wall, and I couldn't accept anybody's help. And I don't understand why, but at the time, I just thought, this is my life, this is who I am, it is what it is. But I was severely wrong. And one day I had an insight, a eureka moment, and it just, the calling was to go outside. So one day I went into my local woodland, I went for a little walk, and I came back and I felt so peaceful. And it was the first time in years that I had a still mind, and it was beautiful, a really beautiful experience, it really was. And at the time I thought, wow, what is this? How can I harness this more? So the next day, I did the same again, and the same thing happened again. And the next day, same thing happened again, and so on and so forth. And before I know it, I was feeling my normal self. I had energy, I had optimism, motivation. I was feeling joy, I was feeling happy. And I think, wow, how can I push this further? So then I did a bit of research, and I came across pranayama, breathwork, and cold water therapy. So I started spending a lot more time outside. Any opportunity I had, I'd get all my kit together, head off into the Lake District, spend time in the mountains by myself, meditating, carrying out breath work, cold water therapy. And it really transformed my life. And I understand why now, but at the time I thought, this is fantastic. Whatever it is, I'm going to keep doing it. And, you know, obviously I put a lot of posts on social media, and I'd have a lot of friends say, no, you should do this as a business. You should do this as a business. And I didn't really think, I didn't entertain it for a few years. So I thought, well, no one's going to pay me to take and camp in the mountains. Anyone can do it. And this is true. But then something inside me said, you know what, you need to give this a go. It's a survival thing. It feels aligned with your purpose. So I pursued this. And this led me to, you know, I invested a fair bit of money in a lot of equipment. So I provide all the equipment for wild camping trips. And I just thought, what's the worst can happen? If it fails, it fails. I'll learn from it and I'll move on.
Yeah.
And so I did it. So I invested all the equipment. I obviously spent almost two decades at this point wild camping, plotting routes in the Lake District, knowing the ground inside out. I felt with my military background, I'm now a health and safety professional, corporate health and safety. I've got different qualifications in breathwork, cold water therapy, life coaching, things like that. And I thought, oh, you know what, you've got a good foundation for something here. So I thought, let's give it a go. If you don't know, you don't try, you don't get.
Yeah.
And I had a really good response. And at first, the company was actually called Pegasus Trips. Now,
right.
When I was in the military, I served with 9 Power Squadron, with the Royal Engineers. And Pegasus is an airborne emblem, an airborne logo. So I was still very militarized at that point, so Pegasus Trips was the easy thing to do. And then I realized when I'm taking people on the trips that I was discussing certain things and giving them little insights about how to grow into who they really are and the true selves. And then I realized there's actually a lot more than just taking people wild camping into the mountains. We can incorporate a lot more things by doing this. And the reason, from that first walk I had that sort of a change in my life, the reason that I now know, that when I felt so good, it was because I was in the present moment. And when we go through life, we experience a lot of trauma. And it's just part of our journey. It's unfortunate at the time, but we grow from it. And being in the present moment, you're peaceful. You're not being disturbed by negative thoughts from the past or the future. You're just peaceful. You're true self, happy days.
Yeah.
And this is why spending time in nature, we are part of nature, so you're almost connecting with yourself, you're connecting with your true self. Peaceful, present beings, aren't we?
That's where we're meant to be, isn't it?
That's where we're meant to be, it is.
Yeah.
But a lot of us, we struggle. And it's no wonder, to be honest, because I felt we were born into a society where there's a term called culturescape. Have you heard of this before?
No, I haven't, no.
Okay, so a culture scape is a term we can use for, it's like a tangled web of rules, beliefs, and procedures that were sort of programmed to do when we're born into this lifetime. So we're believed to, we have to get a certain amount of GCSEs, we have to go to college, we have to go to university, we have to get that mortgage, we have to get that house, we have to get that marriage, we have to have children, and hopefully, when I'm 65, we can retire and live happily for the rest of our lives. Perfect. Well, that's not the case. You know, there's a lot of rules in the society that are good, like eating healthy vegetables, that's good. But a lot of the things, they're not sort of, well, they're not good for us. So culture scape is basically a theory that it's designed to keep us safe, not happy. So when I was spending time outdoors while camping, hiking in the mountains, I realized that this is who I need to be. This is who I am. It's really helping me, and I want to help other people feel the same way how I'm doing. And so I thought, I need to rebrand Pegasus Trips. It's too military. It's too masculine. I need to make it more user-friendly. So I thought, what do I call it? What do I want to do for people? What do I want to do for myself? Well, I want to be healthy. I want to be happy. I want to be healed from all the trauma. I thought, health happens and healing. Perfect.
Does what it says on the tin.
Exactly, yeah. That's as simple.
I like that.
Thank you. And up until very recently, to be honest, we've launched these well-being, wilderness well-being retreats. And we focus a lot on being outside. So we basically go wild camping, which is a key part of it because we connect to ourselves, we connect to nature. And the Lake District is such a beautiful environment for this. We're so lucky to have this on our doorstep up the north. We really are.
Yeah.
And we help people grow awareness to our true selves so they can find the peace and purpose that they really need. Because with so much going on in people's lives and so much trauma that we're unaware of, it's no surprise to me that, you know, and I've been there myself, I've been in my darkest days, it's no surprise that there's so much mental health in the world, unhealthy relationships, people abusing their bodies, people abusing their minds, because it's easy to get caught up in the rat race and follow these rules that we're supposed to be following.
Yeah.
So when you go to the Lake District, you go while camping, it's an escape. But it's not just an escape, it's a realization. And when we pursue this, we can find real peace and calmness in our minds and our bodies and our beings. And I found that I'll introduce you to a concept called Kensho versus Satori. Are you familiar with this or not?
No.
Okay, so it's really interesting. It's come from a philosopher in Japan, I believe. So basically, the concept is we're born at point A and our journey in life is to get to point B. And along this path, we will come across Kensho moments and Satori moments. So Kensho is growth by pain, and Satori is growth by insight. So you may have experienced this, and please let me know if you've ever had a eureka moment, an insight where you've thought, wow, that's a great idea. I definitely need to do this. Have you had one?
Yeah, I'm sure we've had plenty of those over the years.
They're the nice ones. So... And this helps us evolve, it helps us grow, it helps us find our true purpose in life. Now, along from getting A to B, we're going to make little mistakes, yeah? Mm. And if we deviate from our true path, then the universe has got a fun way of giving us a little smack on the bum, and it'll give us a Kensho moment. So we'll have a little dip, but then we'll grow from it. And what I like to make people aware when we spend time in nature is make them aware of these Kensho moments and understand that, you know, you always grow. There's always light in the darkness. There's always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And as I found, being in nature is just a perfect place to do it. It really is. And once you accept that if there's something uncomfortable in your life, this is what we like to teach. If there's something uncomfortable in your life and you feel, you know, you can't get out of it, just accept it. It's a Kensho moment. You need to take a step in the right direction. Take that step, have faith, and you'll grow and you'll evolve. Sometimes you've got to follow your intuition, despite it being a bit of a painful process. But if you have a Satori moment, this is a growth through insight, the Eureka moments, these are the good ones. And I find that the more you find your true self and you grow your awareness, then you become a much more peaceful, present person, being. And everyone's happy.
Definitely. Completely agree with that. It's a simple term that I've used in the past. It's there's no winning or losing, it's winning or learning. And I think that fits in with that, obviously on a very more basic line compared to what you've just mentioned there. But it's a similar thing, isn't it? It's about learning from those setbacks and how we come back from those, isn't it? And
exactly.
The fact that you're doing this in nature makes it all the better for me, because you're speaking to the converted when it comes to getting out in nature for the benefits of it. Definitely. There's no better place to start focusing on your dreams or coming up with new ideas than being outside.
Yeah.
All of my eureka moments, as you put them, have probably come to me whilst I've been out hiking at some point or wild camping.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same. The mountains is my place to go for divine guidance, to feel healthy, to feel happy. It's the perfect place. It really is.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I just want to go back a little bit here to your aggressive camping. How much different is it now to be going out camping for the purpose of leisure and for help for your health and your happiness and your healing than it was to be doing it when you was in the military?
Right, I'll paint you a picture. So imagine you're in the Brecon Beacons. It's very, very wet. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're nice and cozy in your sleeping bag and your nice dry clothes. Somebody gives you a tap on your helmet, tells you, Martin, it's your time to go on stag. You need to go and watch. So you get out of your sleeping bag. It's raining a lot. I'll really refrain from swearing here. You have to take your dry clothes off. You put your wet clothes back on, and then you go and lie outside for 2 hours. That is aggressive camping. And then you wake up the next day to a frozen water bottle, not the nicest ration packs. You're exhausted. You're pushed and pushed and pushed. I understand the concept. You have to build resilience, which is a key factor for that particular career, for obvious reasons. Whereas now, it's every time I go to the Lake District or Wales or Scotland and I'm wild camping, it feels like I'm on holiday, because I feel like I'm home. Every time I'm driving to lakes of Scotland or Wales, I feel like I get excited. It does feel like as soon as I get my tent set up or my poncho, I'm just happy, peaceful, present, nothing else to do, perfect.
Yeah, I completely relate to that. It's one of the best places to be, isn't it? Just set your tent up and there's nobody ever around, is there? It's amazing how much of an expanse of land the Lake District is, and yet you can go camping and not see a single person the whole time that you're out.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Right, I want to go back and just touch on, we're still sort of, I'm sort of going back here a little bit to what you said earlier on when you introduced yourself. So you went to Afghanistan on your first tour,
yeah,
and you got a severe injury that's taken 18 months to heal.
Yes.
Now, we all hear, those of us that have not been in the military, we hear of the stories of PTSD, mm-hmm. And the effects of being out on tour and the things that you see and becoming desensitized to these things almost on purpose, because the military will almost desensitize you on purpose so that you can go out and function in these war zones.
Exactly.
And then you've got to come back and sort of get back into normal life. And I don't know the ins and outs of it because I've never been in the military, but you tend to hear these horror stories of they just sort of push you back in and say, right, now it's time to crack on and be a civilian again.
Yeah.
Is it a bit like that or is there more to it?
No, it's pretty much exactly like that. Yeah, unfortunately it is. A prime example of very poor treatment for the military. When I was released from, it was called Headley Court at the time, Rehabilitation Centre. So anyone with injuries from the military, physical or mental, would go there for an extended period of time. It was a fantastic place. The staff there did so much good work. It was really beautiful to be there. And when I was released from there and back into normal life, obviously I was aware I was a very damaged person because of what happened. And I would go out drinking a lot, and this is how I'd suppress my emotions from coming up, because I didn't know how to deal. At the time, I didn't know how to deal with what was going on inside me, what actually happened. I couldn't comprehend the severity of it. So I was drinking a lot, abusing my body, and violence was my escapism. Violence was my go-to. That's how I'd, what's the word I'm looking for?
Almost like an escape, I guess.
Yeah, that was my way to vent myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, I go on a night out and someone gave me a shoulder brush and looked a bit funny. I'd start some sort of conflict. I think in that first month, I got arrested about three times, which is disgusting. And I knew I needed help. So the military, they sort of sent a military psychiatrist at the time. And she asked me what's going on. I explained. And her advice was at the time, and this is a military psychiatrist, okay, Martin, I recommend that you stop drinking. I was like, okay. And when you get these thoughts and these emotions coming up, just try not to talk about them. And hopefully it should get better. Now, at the time, I thought, well, even I know that's wrong. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I know that's wrong.
I'm not a psychiatrist, and I've not been through what you've been through, but that does not sound like good advice.
Yeah, it's literally the worst advice. So at that point, I sort of give up on the military. I thought, wow, what's going on? So I just got worse and worse. And obviously, then when I redeployed, my second tour was even more kinetic than my first tour. Despite what happened, it was very kinetic. So it was very difficult. So when I did come back to UK, I knew at the time that my time in the military was over. I really only stayed in the army to go back to Afghanistan. At the time, I felt like I had a point to prove. I didn't like the feeling of being beaten. So I needed to go back to Afghanistan. And in some respects, I'm glad that I did go back. In some respects, I regret going in the military altogether, but it has shaped me into, it did give me a lot of values and a lot of lessons at the time. Like we talked about earlier, it's all about lessons or blessings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so when you leave the military, you after Afghanistan, so you do a period of decompression in Cyprus. Basically, you go on the piss for a couple of days, drink way too much alcohol, fight with each other. And this is 2 days later, you're like, okay, you're good to go.
Wow.
Yeah. And then obviously coming back to England, it was just a bizarre feeling. It was more bizarre on my second tour because on my first tour, I was only out there for about 3 months. And to be honest, it was a very, in terms of action, if you want to call it that, it was very quiet up until I was injured and my colleagues lost their lives. So it was very quiet. Whereas my second tour, it was consistent every single day. It was a very kinetic tour. So coming back to normal life, I remember my partner at the time, she was getting really upset about a washing machine that was broken. And I could feel the rage building up in me.
Yeah.
She was overreacting about a washing machine. But I had, people have their own reactions to things. She's got her own stuff going on.
I suppose that's your perception of how insignificant that was compared to what you've just been.
And that's the beautiful thing about perspectives. They're very beautiful and very unique, aren't they? And,
perspectives.
Anybody's perspective is right because that's their perspective, and you've got to accept that and acknowledge it. You don't have to believe in it, but you have to accept it. Otherwise, you're just causing issues. So coming back to normal life, dealing with those major issues such as broken washing machines and trying to keep my cool, it just didn't work. So I became even more angry because all this aggression, all this trauma was just built up and up. And I needed help at the time. I did. I really needed help. I became suicidal, went for a period of self-harming. It was pretty bad. And then I think at the time there was a 6 month waiting list to get admitted into the military facility to get some help for the mental side of things.
That's a long wait, isn't it?
6 months is a long time. A long time.
Yeah.
It is. So again, I give up on the military again. I thought, they're doing absolutely nothing for me here. The NHS tried psychiatrists and things. And then I had that moment where I had the calling to go outside, and that's where it all started getting a lot better.
So had you had any help up until that point? So you'd been waiting for help and it hadn't arrived on time. Was you sort of given any help or any medication or anything to deal with it? Or was it a case of... Luckily, you found the outdoors.
I never took medication. I actually stopped taking the pain medication after I got injured by the suicide bomber because I just hated the way I felt from being drowsy, not my normal self. Mm. It's quite ironic that I then turned to other drugs to keep myself sane at the time.
Yeah.
But fortunately, that's when I found the great outdoors and my passion and my love for the outdoors just came back and just evolved into something beautiful, and it just spiraled and spiraled. And it's obviously led to where we are today.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So let's focus on the present day then. You've mentioned you set it up as Pegasus. Was it quite difficult to let go of that, even though Because the way I see it is this, and it'd be the same in my world, which we'll talk about after. If you left it, you kind of have this pull, like you don't want to quite let go of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something there that's just holding you back. So was that your way of saying, like, I'll call it Pegasus because I don't want to let go of the fact that I've given so much of my time and my life to the military?
Exactly that. Exactly that. Because even though I wasn't in the military, I still associated everything with the military. The way I talked, the way I acted, all my memories, some of my best moments, some of the worst moments in my life was all from, in reality, a very short period of time, 7 years. It's not a lot. But because so much happened in that period of time.
Yeah.
And at the time, don't get me wrong, I joined the military because I needed that structure. I needed that discipline. So it did save my life in many ways now, I'm realised. But yeah, I was very still much attached to the military. I'd look forward to going to the airborne reunions, catching up with all the guys that are still in, and they're more like family at the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the bonds you get when you're in certain situations, obviously. But yeah, I was very much attached to the military. So Pegasus trips was perfect. So I used to walk around in still my parachute t-shirts and my maroon tops and whatnot, and still catching up with the guys. But then slowly but surely, I sort of drift away from that mindset. It was a period of my life that was good. It had to happen. It happened for a reason, obviously.
And then you obviously changed it to exactly what it is. So the health, happiness, and healing. And for you, the healing side of things has been, not only are you now offering that to other people, it's been for you, really, hasn't it?
It really has, yeah. It's been a really exciting and profound journey so far. It really has. Up until very recently, I've been through a very transformative period of growth and evolving myself. And I'm just so excited to bring this to other people. Being outside in nature alone is one of the greatest tools we've got. And obviously we can push that further, the other tools and practices.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about the company then. When did you set it up?
Around 2 years ago now.
Okay, right. And so that started on the back of you getting outside, enjoying going wild camping and being out in the Lake District, etc. You absolutely loved that. And somebody sort of said, you should do this as a business. And you thought, well, let's give it a go. Let's see what happens. So how has that progressed since that date then? How many people have you taken out since then, and where have you taken them? What exactly have you done on your trips?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So when you can find a career that's your passion, it doesn't feel like you're working, does it? That's the goal, isn't it? To go.
Absolutely.
To take a group of people, a group of beautiful people, hike along the Anglesey Coastal Path in the mountain in the Lake District, and call that work, it's fantastic. It really is.
Yeah.
The very first trip I run was a day trip. I had about 25 women come on that one. We went round Ride of the Water, took them into Lochrig Fell and into Rydal Caves, and then we went to Ride of the Water for the breathwork and cold water therapy.
Brilliant.
Made them all fresh sandwiches, scones, cream, jam, like little afternoon tea by the water. It was perfect. So that was the first one. And I knew from that first trip that this is definitely my calling. And then, so obviously the first wild camping trips were booked. And again, I was a bit unsure how that would go with people's physical capabilities. So obviously I'd have to speak to each individual first, adapt my routes so they suit everybody that's within the capabilities. And what's really amazed me is just how much people underestimate what they're capable of. And sometimes you just need that gentle nudge. And again, they have these eureka moments when they get to the top. And it really, I'm a laugh at this, but we talked about the Kensho moments, growth through pain.
Yeah.
Well, when I take people on trips, it's almost a mixture of Satori moments through insights when they get these eureka moments. And it's also Kensho moments, growth through pain, because yes, they will suffer physically. They'll be panting and ranting and swearing at me, pushing up that mountain. However, when they get to the top, it's like a revelation. I never know I could do that. I didn't know I could do it. Of course you can. We've all got that power within us. Sometimes we just need a little bit of encouragement, don't we? And it works a treat, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So those people then, the people that you've taken out, They have that sort of lacking confidence, I'm guessing, in getting out there and doing it alone. Because as you pointed out at the very beginning, we can all go hiking, we can all go wild camping on our own.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people, I'm guessing, are coming out with you and they're realizing they can do this, but they're getting that confidence boost by being with somebody. So is it sort of the people that you are taking out are those people that really, really interested in perhaps going wild camping, probably could do it on their own, but just want that little bit of help and a little bit of assistance on the way?
Yeah, I find I do get a lot of repeat guests coming to the trips. However, I do get people coming off. And I love the fact that people can use what I provide as a stepping stone to do it themselves. It gives people that confidence. Yes, people can go on wild camp by themselves, but there's actually quite a lot to know and quite a lot to understand with regards to equipment, routes, safety. And I understand completely it can be quite daunting to someone that does want to do it, doesn't necessarily have the friends that want to do it, and so they want to do it by themselves. Quite a daunting prospect, I get it. And yeah. A lot of people still think there's monsters and bears and wolves in the mountains as well, so I'm about to dispel a lot of those myths. but again, once you explain the equipment, what it's used for, you know, the mixture of cost, weight, efficiency, it all comes into its own play. And giving people that confidence and that experience, it's a beautiful thing to be part of. It really is. And then when I find, when I give them recommendations and send them links for equipment to go and buy themselves, sometimes I'll go in my own time, I'll invite people along that I've took on business trips. And then before you know it, I see posts, they're off by themselves or with their friends, and they're taking their friends, and it's just going on and on. Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right in terms of getting that little bit of sort of backing and a bit of help on the way, because it's little things like the first time I ever went wild camping, I took what I thought I needed, which felt like, you know, you've got the whole house on your back, and yet you get up there and there's always something you forget. You're not warm enough, or you're just ill-prepared one way or another. So, I mean, yeah, you can go through it by learning the hard way, or you can go with somebody who can teach you exactly what you need. They can borrow you things so that you don't have to go out and fork out for all these things and then sometimes not need them. I think it's a great, it is a niche, and I think it's a great thing that you're doing. I really do. And I can think of loads of people that I've had messages from over the last 2 years just doing this, who have asked all of these sort of questions about new to wild camping and what can I get, where should I go? And I think that if I could have just signposted them in your direction, I think they'd have just snapped your hand off, to be quite honest. So I really do think that you've got something there.
Yeah, thank you. Again, providing the equipment was a key part to me. I'm aware of other companies that don't provide the equipment, but they recommend what to bring. However, I like to give people a stress-free wild camping experience when they come purely for wild camping. And it's really interesting to explain the kit, what it weighs, how it can affect you, how to put a rucksack on properly. Simple things to people that have done it, obviously. But if it's new to you, it's new to you. You have to learn these skills. Yeah. You have to learn the procedures, don't you? And you've got to build those foundations up. And obviously, that's what we provide for people.
That's brilliant. So let's talk about a trip then. Somebody gets in contact with you, they book onto a trip. Where do you meet them? Do you meet them prior to going to the hills, or do you talk through the kit list beforehand, or do you have the kit packed up, ready to go? Talk me through the whole process.
Okay, so let's say you were to message me, say I'd like to book on a certain trip. We'd have a little conversation, and then I would forward you the full trip itinerary. Now, within the itinerary, it's got all the details about what we'll be doing with regards to, I call them transformational teachings, and the pranayama, the breathwork, the cold water therapy, the wild camping side of things, where we'll be hiking, what height, the routes, the terrain, what to bring, what will be provided for them. And that pretty much covers everything. So then I always offer, if people would like to enjoy and relax for the full experience, then they can always jump in the cars of myself and the other instructors that come along. Otherwise, people might just want the peace and quiet of themselves, not listen to my rubbish singing voice to FM Smooth. Smooth FM, sorry. and then when we arrive at the location, I would distribute the kits that were already packed in the rucksacks. I'd explain what kit is where, because it always gets lost somehow. what each piece of kit equipment is for. And then it's generally we would crack on with the route. Along the way, we'd stop, we'd have little chats, little discussions, little teachings. We'd get the guests to do little exercises, again, just to grow their awareness and help people find a true purpose and peace. And then we'd find a suitable spot, usually it's pre-planned out.
That wasn't even great English.
Perfect to me, thank you. we set up camp, get some food on the go. Now, depending on the group, where we are, that would dictate on what food that I'd plan for that trip. So if we're going on a multi-day trip, then generally I'd always use freeze-dried ration packs just to cut the weight down. And it gives you that necessary fuel that you need. And to be honest, when you are that physically exhausted, a freeze-dried ration pack tastes amazing.
I was going to say, they taste great, don't they, after a long day?
Yeah, of course. I always take a few dry seasonings as well. Perfect. But, you know, if we're not going too far and it's a request from a group booking, then I've made steak dinners on top of the mountains. Quite a popular one to use is porcini mushroom risotto with parmesan smoked salmon. I had a group of ladies want tapas on top of mountains. They had little plastic champagne flutes with tapas. So yeah, it all depends on what experience the people would like, what they'd like to do, and we tailor it to each trip.
So when you go on these wild camping expeditions, we'll call them, or trips, you just mentioned there that you do the breath work and the cold water therapy as well. Is that all included within each trip?
Yeah, it's for me, it's quite a fundamental part of it. You know, it's optional for people to do. And again, a lot of people are quite worried about getting the cold water. But again, it just goes to show that once we explain and advise, once you're in the present moment, you can overcome anything. So being outside in nature is the first step. So I call breath work, being in nature, and cold water therapy the power three. So you're going outside for a walk, you're already looking around, you're looking around at the trees, you're looking around at the mountain, you're listening to the sounds of the birds, you're listening to the sound of the wind whistle through the trees, you're watching your footsteps. That's you in the present moment, because you're completely present and focused on what you're doing and where you are. So when we're in that state of mind, it's perfect to... Now I go into in-depth lessons about cold water therapy, how it started, where it started, what is cold water therapy, what's it all about, basically. So people have got a really in-depth understanding of the process. And then I practice a simple breathwork routine that helps you keep present as you're entering the water. Now, I'm now in a position where I've been it for so long, I can break ice in a lake and a return and just walk steadily in. My heart rate won't beat out of sync, and my breath won't change. And when people are outside in nature and they're knee deep in the water as they're walking in freezing cold water, and you know, I've had people have panic attacks mid-depth from that way, sleeping water. I'm just explaining the breathwork process, getting them to be present again. It's amazing what we can overcome. And I like to be sure that, you know, we don't have to use breathwork just to enter cold water. Yes, it's a stressful situation because your mind, your ego is telling you it's too cold, get out, what are you doing, this is ridiculous. However, when you're present, you can overcome it. And in day-to-day life, you can do this. If you know you're going to a stressful situation, if you know you're going to meet that person at work that fires you up, gets you a bit riled, just relax, just breathe, be present. And then you can respond to situations, you can respond to people instead of reacting out of emotion or ego and just causing a more kinetic situation. Now, there's no point in wasting your energy because of somebody else's issues. Just by acknowledging what they're saying, what the people are doing, that acknowledging the situation, we can just remain present and peaceful and not let it affect us.
Yeah. That was one of the things I was going to ask you about, how cold water therapy is a transferable skill in everyday life, because people say it can help you, and you just basically answered that question there. I suppose it takes doing it more and more so that your body is used to it, and almost getting that muscle memory, dare I use that word, so that you can remember how you breathe, how you think during that moment of cold and being present, and then relating back to that even when you're not cold and you're not in the water. And that really makes sense, actually, about being present, because it's so easy to let us sort of be emotionally involved in those conflict situations, we'll call them. Especially like the workplace, when you're getting a bit heated discussion, or even outside of work, you know, you mentioned people going into bars and barging into people, for example.
Yeah.
Just being present and in that moment and just being able to focus on yourself rather than your emotions, if that makes sense, and letting them take over. I suppose that's how it becomes transferable.
Yeah, definitely. And if people, you know, they are looking to, when they're out while camping, it's a perfect opportunity to practice cold water therapy, because you come across so many beautiful tarns, lakes, rivers, little waterfall pools. There's amazing places near us. But I'd always advise people to, you know, get a bit of an understanding about the process and practice the breath work, practice cold showers at home. Start with 30 seconds, the next time 45 seconds, and just keep building up and up. And until you're comfortable. And now we've all got our own capabilities. We've all got our own limitations. If I were to start training as a doctor, for example, I'd meet people along my journey to become a qualified doctor. They're at different stages. We're all equal. We're just at different stages of a journey. That's all it is. And like any other process, you've got to learn it before you feel comfortable. So I'd always advise people, do the breath work. Practice. If you want to wear a wetsuit the first time you go, however many times you want to go, wear a wetsuit. It doesn't matter what people say. If you want to have had people wear flotation devices, because that makes them feel comfortable and it breaks that barrier of fear, and it helps them overcome that. And then they'll do it next time and they'll have a little revelation, a eureka, a satori moment. It's perfect. And with regards to the breath work, I do like the Wim Hof method. Is great for filling your body full of oxygen, prevents cold water shock, things like that. But the one it's a simple one that I use for the cold water. It's 4-4-4. You breathe in through your nose for 4 seconds, hold your breath for 4 seconds, and you breathe out for 4 seconds. And you do this sort of 10 repetitions before you go in, as you're getting changed into your swimming costume. And as you're entering the water, you're carrying on with the 4-4-4. Now, as you're entering the water, you're consciously focusing on every single second, and doing so will put you in the present moment. And as soon as you get a couple of thoughts coming through saying it's too cold, get out. Yeah, that's fine. You'll get thoughts coming through. Like, we'll have thoughts telling us this is a bad idea. Don't listen to him. He's stupid. She's horrible. It's our ego. We need to detach from this. So go back. Just be aware of the thoughts. Don't feed them. Go back to consciously focusing on every single second. And before you know it, you're waist deep. You inhale. You hold your breath. You exhale down to your chin in the water. And your first reaction is to go, that's freezing. What am I doing? Again. Breathe, hold, and you acclimatise to temperature, and before you know it, you're like, well, it's not that bad.
That sounds great, actually. I've never sort of incorporated those things all in one. I've done them individually, hiking, wild camping, been in cold water. Breath work, that'd be new to me. That's something I've never experienced, actually. And it sounds like it all sort of fits hand in hand. The way you've just put that makes so much more sense. So it's something that I think that I need to have a look at, perhaps next time I go into cold water, so that I don't get that big shock.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can manage it a little bit better.
You should try
it.
Now, don't get me wrong. People who do try the cold water, after you've done it a long time, you could literally run in and go, and you'd be fine. But and that's fine if people want to do that. But what I like to practice is just the fact that we have the ability within ourselves to go into any situation and be present and be calm. There's a greater meaning to doing it in a certain way. We can enjoy it the same regardless.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to give that a whirl.
Let me know how it goes.
That's definitely... Yeah, maybe I'm having a eureka moment right now.
Bonus.
Right, Martin, let's talk about some of the kit then. So you've mentioned that you take people out on the hills wild camping, and you supply all of that kit as well. So how many bits of kit have you got lying about in your house? Because my missus is going mad at the fact that I've just got my own stuff.
Really? Okay. So I basically got to go outdoors going on upstairs. I currently have 15 full sets of equipment if we're doing multiple trips. So that includes... Kind of talk through the equipment. Do you want to know about the equipment?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I'm definitely going to, because I'm a complete nerd when it comes to gear.
All right, so
definitely going to ask that question eventually.
So we use the, I'm okay discussing brands.
Yeah.
Okay, so we use Osprey 6.5 litre rucksacks, are, you know, good bits of kit.
Yeah, plenty big enough as well.
Yeah, plenty big enough. And it always amazes me when I tell people, you need to bring this. And all people really need to bring is the walking boots, suitable clothing, a travel toothbrush and toothpaste, and water shoes, a lightweight dry towel, and water shoes and swimming costume. That's all they need to bring.
Yeah.
What people still bring always amazes me, coming with suitcases around, and it's baffling, it really is. But yeah, each person will get a rucksack containing the sleeping equipment. Now, depending where we are, what we're doing, it could be a sleeping bag, 2, 3, 4 season sleeping bags, a bivy bag, an insulated inflatable sleeping pad. I also give people now a foam folding pad as well to go underneath that, and a seat pad as well. They'll get a water filter, knife, fork, spoon, plate, bowls. If depending what trips and what we're cooking, they all get a seat to summit collapsible kettles, collapsible cups. And then in my bag, I'll carry like the heavy stuff, the gas, all the... Now we get quite fancy with the hot drinks now. We have like hot chocolate, cappuccinos, vanilla lattes, tea. So it's a nice little selection.
Nespresso machine.
Yeah. And then people get like sanitizer, head torches, tissues, collapsible pillows, stuff like that. So everything you need.
Tent. Wow, so the full works.
Every single piece of equipment you need is provided, and it's makes it nice and simple for everybody then.
That's brilliant. So do you take that many people in one go as well, 15
people? No. Don't take that many people. No. I just got that in case we do like 2 trips at once or something. But usually we have less numbers. I've worked with friends who've got businesses and they want to take their clients on larger trips. So, you know, the odd time we do bigger groups. But we are looking to branch out into, you know, doing these trips for like corporate events, like a corporate wellbeing building weekends, wild camping, doing all the stuff we know to make ourselves feel good. Give yourself a newfound peace, energy, productivity, perfect.
Even if you just hired out like a semi-wild campsite, you know, the ones where you can just sort of use someone's land.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect for that, wouldn't it? If you're doing like corporate stuff where you've got 15 people coming along from a company and they're doing a team building exercise and doing the breath work and the cold water. That'd be amazing.
Well, we've actually just literally discussed what the future goal is.
This is what happens, you see. I get this many ideas running through my head. I'm already starting to plan your business for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So how many people have you taken at the most at any given time then?
We do certain trips in Wales for a good friend and his clients. I think there's been about 12 people on those trips.
Yeah, that's great.
Ideally, I like to... When I now do these wilderness wellbeing retreats, I like to keep it to 6 to 8 people maximum. 6 people is perfect for myself. It's nice and intimate. I can give everyone attention and keep an eye on everybody for safety reasons and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, obviously, being health and safety expert now as well, that's your... You've got to...
On paper, I'm quite ironic.
We'll call you that. we'll call you that. That's fine. Don't worry. So what about you then? This is obviously quite a big thing for you in your life, but what about your sort of aspirations to do with the outdoors? I mean, aside from this as a business, have you got any big things planned for yourself? Any hikes, any big wild camps that you just, like your bucket list items? Have you got anything like that going on?
Well, I've recently got into bouldering and climbing.
Oh, right.
So I've just started with that, and I work with a friend. We do sort of adventure wellbeing days, so we incorporate going through caves, tunnels, breathwork. We abseil down the quarry into the water to do cold water therapy, and that got me into this. So he's talking about going on trips to Morocco and Spain and Cyprus and some beautiful places to go wild camping, hiking through the mountains, take all the climbing stuff. So these are some aspirations to conquer, definitely.
Amazing. I think you've got plenty going on at the minute, though, by the sounds of things. It sounds like you're taking people out camping and doing your breath work and your cold water therapy stuff is amazing, and it sounds like you're gonna have plenty of stuff going on. Have you got plenty of bookings sort of coming in for this year?
Yes, I mean, I need to be a bit proactive with future trips. I tend to keep trips maybe 3 months in advance before I release the next dates. Last year was very, very busy, to the point where I'm a keen fisherman as well. I've got a boat I take on the sea. And then last year I didn't have the chance to take it out at all because I was busy with trips all the time. So I really am trying to give myself a little bit more free time this year. But I understand it's important to put the work in and build those foundations and get that experience and build the customer basis up. So this year we're running, we'll do one of the wilderness wellbeing retreats every month. We'll do... a day trip once a month, and you also do wellbeing days, which are free of charge to people. Sometimes it's on local fells, sometimes it's the local river, just getting people outside in nature, taking them for a nice little walk, And again, do the breath and cold water therapy. Just this, usually this is like a midweek evening for that's suitable for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So is it just you that's doing this at yourself at the moment, Martin, or have you got like, are you growing a team of people around you?
Yeah, growing a team. I've got a lot of good support when I need it, to be honest. I've got a couple of good friends that live in Preston as well that are ex-military. I've got other friends that I work with that are really good for helping people become the best version of themselves as well. My daughter's mother, Gemma, she's currently going through pretty bad time with health conditions and stuff. She's gaining a newfound perspective for her own life as well through this process. So again, there's always light in the dark, and she's having a great input on how to activate the business to a next level. So everybody's putting their own initiative into it and their own perspectives, and it's just coming into something beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds like all of these things merge together
don't they? They really do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see it sort of flourishing from that point onwards. But before we sort of finish, there's one question I did want to ask you prior to that. When you're taking people out, have you got any memorable experiences from when you've taken? So you talk about these eureka moments, the light bulb moments, those times where you've taken people out camping and someone has just had that massive eureka moment that's really made you think, this is exactly why I do it.
Yeah, I've had it several times. And it's generally with people that maybe, physically, it's generally for people that are physically not the fittest. And
yeah,
when they reach the top of that mountain after spitting the dummy out, call them your sorts of names, this is rubbish, what am I doing? I can't do it, I'm tired, I'm knackered, my legs are aching, my back's aching. When they get to that top of the mountain, they have the eureka moments, they have the satori moments, and they realize, wow, I can do this. And they look around, they're peaceful, and they get a real sense of achievement. And quite rightly so, because they do push themselves beyond the point of pain to a greater place. And they find it when they're up high in the mountains.
Yeah.
As we all do.
Completely relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lastly then, it's obviously a very important question. What's your go-to trail snack when you're out on the hills?
Honey roasted peanuts.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. What's yours?
Honey roasted peanuts. Me, I'm always just a jelly baby kind of guy, or Skittles or something really full of sugar.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I like that. That's an interesting one. Worth noting, yeah. I guess. Because I guess with people who come hiking with you and go wild camping, everybody needs a trail snack. So do you always tell them, sort of, make sure you bring something like that?
I do suggest they bring additional high-energy snacks, but in their front belt loop pouches, I'll also put protein bars, granola bars, Rice Krispie bars, and a small Tupperware tub with honey roasted peanuts. So wow. They do come with a few snacks as well to keep them going. Nice and easy access as well.
Not only do you get all the equipment you need, you've also got little treats hidden away down there in your little pouches.
Yep.
And that's even better because you could just tell them halfway up, couldn't you? Oh, I'm really hungry. Just have a little look down there in your pouch.
Surprise.
Wow. What a treat that'd be. Right, Martin, how can people find you? Follow Health, Happiness and Healing on social media. If you're on social media, or if you've got a website, how can people find you and see what you're up to?
Yep. Okay. So we do have a website. However, it's currently under construction. We're getting it revamped for the different aspects we're trying to push across now. So for the meantime, if people can reach out on Instagram and Facebook, Instagram, it's _health_happiness_healing, and Facebook, Health, Happiness and Healing.
Excellent. As always, we'll put these into the show notes so that people can follow those links. But other than that, I want to thank you very much for your time. Your business idea is fantastic. It's really, really good. I hope that there's loads of people that are out there thinking, I quite fancy doing that. I've been into hiking and I want to go wild camping. A bit nervous doing it on my own. Yeah, Martin's your answer. So hopefully that there'll be people out there that sort of come and have a look at what you do. I'm certainly interested in what you do, so we'll speak more after. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It was a pleasure to chat with Martin. overcoming a serious injury from such horrific circumstances to being able to find healing in the outdoors and now share his passion with others. What a great story. And I wish him every bit of success with health, happiness and healing. Please go and give him a follow on social media. There is still time to challenge yourself. On April the 29th with Summit Else Events, 40 kilometres around the Lancashire countryside, passing hills, ruins and reservoirs on the Angles Arc Loop Challenge. With an entry fee of just £32, this promises to be a fantastic day out, testing your grit as you race the clock to finish in under 12 hours. And of course, claim your awesome medal, which I've had made by Officially Smashed It, and the all-important pizza feast. See the link in the show notes, give Summit Else Events a follow, and get yourself booked onto the Angles Arc Loop Challenge now. If you enjoy listening to Summit to Talk About, please leave a 5-star review on your podcast provider. I really do appreciate all of you for listening. If you'd like to become an official supporter, you can join the Patreon community and bag yourself some cool stickers and extra content. And now you can also join me backstage as I interview my guests online. See the link in the show notes. Lastly, I'll be heading to the National Outdoor Expo at the NEC in Birmingham on the 18th and 19th of March. So if you're going and you spot me there, please come and say hello. I would absolutely love to meet you. And that is all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I'll see you in the next one.